This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Welcome everybody to our podcast today. My name is Rachel McAdams, and I'm a member of ILTA's litigation support content creation team. Joining me today for our podcast on e-discovery processing, a deep dive, is Daniel Smith from Control Risks. Dan, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi everyone, I'm Daniel Smith. I'm an Associate Director at Control Risks and have worked in e-discovery and computer forensics in the EMEA region, supporting projects in all parts of the EDRM lifecycle over the last 20 years. Thank you for having me today.
Great, thanks Dan. And thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive on processing. Processing, as you mentioned, you're familiar with all steps of the EDRM. Processing is just one step. And I'd like to delve a little bit into how the other steps in the EDRM influence processing and vice versa. So we start at the beginning, sort of collections. How do different approaches to collection or different types of collections affect how that collected data gets eventually processed?
It's a very good question. Essentially, you need to have a good understanding through a data mapping exercise to ensure you are collecting the data in an appropriate fashion. It's important to do that because otherwise you might find the delays occur in the later stages of the review when time pressures are often more significant. So I would say really it begins with the data mapping to have a good understanding of essentially what you are collecting to make sure that the end result is correct. On a typical computer, you'd expect to obviously find office documents of an email. All of that can be processed in a straightforward fashion and made available for review. However, it's increasingly common now to find other data types, perhaps proprietary databases and other structured data, which need to be handled differently. So it's really important in that identification phase to plan how you're going to handle all of the data there that to make it reviewable. So I would say it's very important to get that information about what data you're expecting right at the beginning. Use collection questionnaires, establish where the data is held. The more information that you have at the outset, the better the results of the processing will be. Consider what is important to your case and how you intend to actually handle those lesser common file types that you might encounter. We also have to think, though, it's not just about the file types. Particular systems that you might encounter on a collection might have particular nuances. For instance, you might find the email system has an archiving element to it. Unless you actually collect that email system in a comprehensive full manner, you could perhaps be left with stubbed emails when it comes to actually looking at those emails in your review, where the emails don't actually have the full content. So it's really important at those early stages to get a very good understanding of what data you're actually collecting. So we could now move on, if you like, Rachel, and talk about some of the specific file types that we typically might encounter on a collection. And we can discuss how different file types have to be handled in different ways. I mean, one of the particular ones that often occurs on projects are mobile devices, for instance. Collecting data from mobile devices obviously is a challenge in itself. The area is constantly evolving, and you need to ensure you have the appropriate tools to allow you to collect the data in the right manner to make sure all of that data is retrievable. Obviously, you have to ensure you capture all of the key content from mobile devices. That would involve all of the messages and chats. Those might be held simple applications on the phone, such as WhatsApp. You have to be confident that you haven't missed any of that content. So it's very important to have the right software to allow you to collect all of that data. But having said all of that, you also need a correct processing tool, which actually will allow you to actually transfer that data into a reviewable fashion. What you essentially don't want is to collect all of that data from a mobile device and perhaps be left with single chat messages on a review platform that you have to review in an individual basis. You want all of those chat messages essentially to be presented as a single conversation. Processing has evolved, is the good news really, over the years. And now we are able to present those kind of chats in a more standard way. For instance, relatively short message format now exists. It facilitates an easy review of all of that kind of mobile data. So that's the good news there, really. The key point really is that chat data needs to be processed appropriately. Make sure you have the adequate workflows and tools to handle it in the right way and transform it into reviewable content.
I think certainly from my own experience, mobile data has been a problem in the past. Not so much now, but I've definitely had projects where I may not have been expecting mobile data. Someone puts everything through a processing tool and what comes out at the end is just completely unreviewable. When it was there, we probably would have done something different. but not having that information up front has made it very difficult to be able to plan those kind of, those less typical, those unexpected data formats. But I do think, as you were saying, it's become a lot easier to deal with that. And it's just the case of making sure that you have the right tools in place for that processing step to make sure what you're putting in matches what you're expecting.
Absolutely.
And what about sort of other chat messaging systems? I think Bloomberg is one that I think has caused people a lot of headaches in the past. Those kind of that kind of data is also difficult to handle sometimes. Is that your experience?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, Bloomberg is one of those really kind of niche kind of messaging systems, industry kind of specific financial world messaging. Typically, Bloomberg conversations consist of very large chat rooms with many participants, people coming and going from the conversations. Attachments are often sent in those conversations as well. And actually collecting that data, usually you would receive it in essentially dumps of logs, chat histories and files that have come from a system. It's very important to make sure that you get that data in the correct format, really. Once you've got it, you then need a tool that can actually understand the content. And like we said, for the mobile data, you need an effective manner to actually allow you to review it. So you need a good platform that supports that sort of content. And again, the good news is that has got easier now. We have built our own tool now that, for instance, would convert Bloomberg conversations to RSMF format, which would allow you to then filter out all of the essential noise that occurs in a conversation and really hone in on what you're looking for, the key participants in those long chat messages. That all really is important because at the end of the day, you actually want to produce all of this information. You want to produce the conversation. If you have got a long Bloomberg conversation that goes on over many months, you want to just isolate what's relevant and just produce that. So it's very important to do that in the correct manner.
Absolutely. What other types of files or data might you find in a collection that you're not expecting or are slightly unusual, might cause issues with processing?
I think it's very important, really, to mention structured data. It's something that we are encountering on many, many cases now. Database files and proprietary systems cause challenges. It could be that the database file is a textual-based format. It might even be an Excel file or a CSV file. Often they can be very large. And essentially, they could cause problems when you actually come to review them on Relativity or another review platform just because of the size of them. Even if the files can be downloaded and open natively, that the time taken to actually download these really large files can be significant. And obviously, reviewers could spend a lot of time just downloading files and then trying to open them on their machines, often not powerful machines. And again, they could face problems. So it's worth mentioning structured data and large files can cause challenges. That's really the kind of Excel files and CSVs are kind of the easy ones, if you like. You then can talk about a completely different category of sort of database files, which might not even be able to be processed effectively. They could even be flagged as exceptions during processing. So really, when you do encounter those kind of more bespoke systems, again, it comes down to trying to understand from an early stage what you're likely to encounter, but you have to think of other workflows and solutions in terms of how to actually interrogate that data. It might be that you have a data analytics team who does a separate workflow to actually review those particular file formats, and that then can be linked essentially back to the results of the main document review.
That would be a substantial amount of work on top of the document review, sort of analyzing those database or proprietary database formats. I guess your advice in those situations would be to examine whether that process is worth it, whether those database files contain anything that could be relevant.
Yeah, absolutely right, Rachel. So again, it comes back to the very beginning, really, and sort of understanding the full facts of the case and consider the relevancy of what you're actually doing. If the database files, for instance, aren't going to be relevant to your case, perhaps you can exclude them. We've recently had a very large sort of cyber breach and PII case, which essentially the database files have been extremely important because it's those files essentially that allow us to establish the exposure that has actually arisen from the cyber breach. So you can see that there is really a contrast in the relevancy of those particular files. And you're quite right, where it's not relevant, you could just make a decision to exclude those files from review.
Okay, so we talked a bit about the unexpected or unusual files that could affect your processing. In terms of the actual project management of collection and how that feeds into processing, what do you think are the most important important parts that need to be on a team's radar for making sure that that processing is as bump-free as possible in terms of timelines, in terms of tracking what you're doing, how you work out the expected results? What's your advice for people who are trying to plan their processing?
Yeah, so I think what's very, very important is to have good data tracking and logging right from the very beginning of the process. You need to keep things on track, like you mentioned, and appropriately prioritize the processing, essentially. But knowing where all your data has come from is very important at all stages. When it comes to the review itself, in particularly large projects, for instance, being able to actually see, to actually go back and see where the data is that is being reviewed actually comes from, side by side, essentially, using the collection logs is very important. It allows you to keep essentially the case on track and to essentially see when you can consider the review to be complete. We've had collections which have involved a collection of data from the same servers. And it's very difficult to know when you can say the review is complete. But if you have got all this tracking in place, you can determine essentially when you can say you're finished.
Absolutely. And I suppose knowing where data comes from helps you prioritize the work that you're doing as well. And now we live in a remote world, a COVID world. Has that had any effect on processing, which I think people normally think of as a very black box, a technical step that happens in the background? Has there been any change to how processing is carried out, or what impacts does this new working environment have on that processing segment?
I think essentially it's kind of good news, if you like, that in recent times we have all kind of moved towards the cloud. Email, corporate email systems now all exist in the cloud. It's generally where systems are put now. So collecting that data becomes a lot easier when we are working remotely as we are. We don't have to actually go up to a physical device and collect it. All we need is a connector to enable that data to be collected and transferred for processing. So all of it essentially can be done remotely. So that suits the current crisis, the world we're living in, quite well. Obviously, though, we're still dealing with, you know, individual custodians and their laptops, and that aspect of it is obviously more difficult now because people aren't office based. They might be working from a home. Being able to actually go into someone's home, collect their device is a challenge. So it's good in one respect, but more tricky when you deal with actually having to actually get at the device itself.
Absolutely. And of course, you're not in your office either. So if you have equipment in your office, it may not be accessible to you.
Yeah, I think that was particularly something that kind of happened early on in the pandemic. There was lots of kind of, it took everyone by surprise, essentially. So often the equipment was in the wrong places, et cetera, and you couldn't necessarily get your equipment. I think the good thing is a lot of the equipment is very portable. We're all used to traveling, collecting devices globally, internationally, around the world. So it has to be portable. But initially, definitely, I think there was a little bit of having to gain access, which isn't always that easy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've talked about sort of the left-hand side of the EDRM coming from collections into processing. What, when you're processing data, what do you need to think about in order to make sure that the right information and the right data is going through to the review stage? What could you do wrong during processing that affects the review?
Essentially, a typical example might be collecting email from an email system. If you don't have any knowledge of that system, if there is like an archiving element to it, it could be that you perform the collection, think you've actually come away with everything. But we've had cases where we have been given data that has been collected, and essentially when we've processed it, all we've ended up with are stubbed emails. Mm-hmm. You could be missing the whole content of emails, essentially. And that, obviously, if you're discovering that right at the latter stages, it's very, very time consuming to go back and then recollect all that. So it's one of the things that can cause problems.
If I could just share one experience that I've had where processing has caused issues further down the line. I was working on a project. We were collecting sort of Lotus Notes database files. They weren't actually sort of email mailboxes, but they were databases that were being used to store sort of process diagrams and documentation. And we pushed that all through processing and into the review, just using our standard processing protocols, our standard metadata. And once the reviewers got to that data, they were completely flummoxed because none of the metadata was populated. So you couldn't see the name of the file, you couldn't see the author, you couldn't see any dates, everything was just blank. And whilst there was obviously a failure of QC there after processing, what we hadn't realized was that all that Lotus Notes metadata wasn't stored in the typical metadata fields that we pulled on and pushed into the review. So we had to do this big exercise where we went back and worked out where exactly that metadata had gone in the metadata fields within the processing engine. And then we had to pull that all back out and push it into the review with the documents so that the reviewers could actually see what they were supposed to be reviewing, which goes back to your earlier points about knowing what the data, what kind of data you have. And also, I think a point we'll make later on about QC, but it's really, you have to know what you have collected. You have to know if there's anything unusual in there that could cause you problems. And you have to know if there's anything unusual, what you might not be able to push through to the review if you're treating it just the standard way you treat your office files, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people probably just assume that all computer data is kind of the same. But yeah. it's clear from what we've been saying, really, it all has to be treated differently. There's definitely nuances with specific data types that need to be taken into consideration.
Absolutely. I think that's become very clear over the last 15 minutes. And just the last question or last point on this topic. Processing is, as I said earlier, it can be a little bit of a black box. It's rather technical. It's not really something that I think clients have a lot of oversight about. How do you prioritize data to go through processing and into review? Is that a conversation that you'll have upfront with a client about what to prioritize? Do you try to push everything through together? What's your advice?
Certainly, I think we would always try to establish priorities with the client. I mean, particularly when you're dealing with large data volumes, it doesn't really matter how fast the processing engine is. There's always the benefit from applying some prioritization to it. And let's face it, I'm sure in most cases that there are priorities. So it does essentially just involve speaking to the client, finding out who the key individuals are and where they want to start their review. Then we can push all of those particular data sets to the front, essentially, and look to release data on a rolling basis. So it's interesting because it's a question of you're often asked as well, is like, you know, how long will it take to process all of the data? But really, it doesn't have to be like that, right? We don't have to process all of the data. We can prioritize the custodians and release it on a rolling basis. So you can start seeing and reviewing the data in very, very short timeframes of receiving it.
Fantastic. Thanks, Dan. Let's slightly move on from this discussion of where processing sits in the EDRM and focus in a bit more about the technology that we're using for processing. There's a lot of different processing tools out there. I'm sure between the two of us, we're familiar with a lot of them. Everyone listening will have their own preferred tool, the tool that they like to use the best. How do you know what tool or what software is the best for you? And how do you sort of differentiate between all the different processing tools that are out there? If we can break it down sort of to different ways that we can assess them. So if we think about file types, our standard file types, our non-standard file types, do all processing tools treat all different types of files the same way?
No. So it's a very important point, really. Like we said, people just expect, they just think that data is data and it's all processed in the same way. But we've already been mentioning the different sorts of files that we encounter. You can assume that all processing tools obviously will handle common file types, for instance, Office documents, Outlook, and Lotus Notes emails, like you mentioned. However, people's use of computers is constantly evolving. New applications are coming to the forefront. Where the differences lie are usually in the configuration of the engine to extract metadata for those specific file types and also support for those less common file types. So really, it's important to use a processing tool that you know that can handle all of those different file types that you may encounter. So that goes to really using a processing tool that's widely used in the industry and actively developed to handle those changes, because the industry we work in essentially and technology is changing all of the time. So, I mean, if we think of an example, for instance, mobile data, not all processing tools, for instance, would support the processing of mobile forensic images. And the extent to which chat messages can be pulled together into conversations can vary, as we mentioned earlier. if you don't use the correct processing tool, you could face problems when it comes to reviewing that data. Like we said earlier, the right processing tool will essentially will extract that chat content into conversations and ensure that all of the chat is reviewable as conversations.
What about speed or the footprint of the technology? Those are two things that I think come up a lot. We touched on it. How fast are we going to be able to process this data? But also, how much of a footprint does that technology have? Is that something that comes into your calculations?
Yeah, I mean, there's always time pressures to get complete sets of data in front of review teams. In recent times, things have shifted towards the cloud, and this has given us much greater flexibility in terms of being able to essentially harness a more dynamic environment where we can rapidly scale up processing power to get through large data volumes in the shortest time frame possible. However, I mean, that's all well and good, but remember, we can't always use the cloud. For instance, if there's data privacy requirements, we often have to be able to process data behind a client's own firewall. And that could be just a simple laptop that you're deploying on someone's site. Obviously, then you're not going to be able to harness all of that cloud power. So it's important that the processing tool you use can operate on a less powerful machine, essentially.
And deduplication. So that's obviously very important in e-discovery. If we weren't deduplicating, we'd have huge volumes of repetitive data. Do all processing tools let you deduplicate? Is there a particular way of deduplication I should be looking for?
Sure, yeah. So I think obviously deduplication, like you say, is very, very important in order to keep the review costs down. All processing tools do offer some form of deduplication, but I think where there can be benefits is some tools allow you essentially to use a global deduplication to actually reduce the content till its fullest possible, but still allow you to maintain, for instance, an all paths and all custodians field. So you can then still have visibility of all of the deduplicated out data. So essentially you can say, okay, the data's been deduplicated, but I can still see the entirety of this custodian's data. So there are tools that can provide you a little bit of extra flexibility with regard to deduplication.
And then obviously once you've deduplicated, you'll want to remove that duplicate data from your case. Can that cause any issues?
Yeah, I think, you know, removing data from a case is something that happens more frequently than you can imagine. I mean, not talking about essentially just deduplicating the data in the normal course of things, but the deduplication process in itself makes it difficult if you essentially want to remove any of the data that you have processed. The problem being essentially that during the deduplication, the system is essentially hashing all of the files, which then allow duplicate files when they are subsequently processed to be removed. Now, if you want to actually remove some data from the case, that can have bad consequences if you essentially have removed data other than processing new data, which deduplicates out against the removed data. So deduplication itself does cause problems. Again, this is something that some processing tools are getting better at doing and giving you better flexibility to kind of unwind some processes so that if that situation does occur in your case, it isn't quite as a problem as what it could be.
And just one question that's occurred to me as we're talking about this. If you start processing data in a case with a particular tool, would there ever be a situation where you would switch to a different processing tool halfway through? Or would that cause you too many issues?
Yeah, that's definitely a bad idea. I mean, we frequently encounter that situation when we receive data processed by other parties, maybe on a case. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if it's being processed in a different way and we're importing it, there can be differences in the way that different tools deduplicate. And the hashes are not always compatible. So for standalone files, you could pretty much deduplicate irrespective of the platform. But for deduplicating emails, it involves generating email hashes. They can all be generated in different ways. So it's important to use one system if you can to process all of the data. Obviously, we've already mentioned that there are certain file types that might warrant using a different processing workflow, but typically those file types, for instance, mobile data, mobile images, even if they are handled in a separate tool, you wouldn't expect it to necessarily warrant deduplication with the other data that already exists in the main processing tool, main review database, if you like. But there are definite potential issues there when you come to mixing tools.
Okay, that is good advice. Thank you. So what other types of functionality in processing tools do we need to be aware of?
I think OCR is something we haven't mentioned. Obviously, OCR is kind of fundamental to a typical document review because you want to be able to essentially make all of the documents that don't have text, that might be scanned documents. You want to be able to recognize all of the text from those documents and have them all indexed and searchable. But when we talk about OCR, it's not just necessarily about a one-stage process. You have to think about the languages that you might encounter on a project. It might be that OCR has to be essentially run on a number of separate passes to actually capture all of those separate languages. So it can be a very, very time-consuming process. Talking about processing tools and the sort of bottleneck that you could be caused by OCR, it's important to consider how resources are allocated to that process. Can you consider maybe separate workflows which would allow you to OCR documents separately and still get documents released for review? Perhaps you can harness the cloud, like we mentioned, and allocate those resources to the process. Another point to mention really is, can the processing tool also identify images that are embedded within otherwise searchable documents? So some tools might, for instance, just say, okay, well, this document here, it has text. I can extract the text from it. Yeah, that's all I need to do. But there's another aspect where it's more advanced tools essentially can also image those any images found within those documents and supplement the extracted text. So being by doing that, essentially, you've got the most comprehensive search index, including all the extracted text, but also all of the kind of OCR text.
What about exception handling? In particular, I'm thinking about encrypted files or how to decrypt. I found that to be a bit of a tricky process to work through with some tools. And what are your thoughts on the encryption, decryption capabilities?
Yeah, I think fundamentally, the first question really is, has the processing tool that you're using actually identified the encryption in the first place? Because that in itself can be a challenge. Most processing tools will recognize encryption, certainly with regards to your standard Office documents. And then it comes to how that is actually reported to the end user. It comes down essentially to visibility, making sure that the reviewer knows essentially what the situation is with regard to documents. I've seen processing tools process encrypted files and the reviewer essentially would just be presented with a blank document with no further commentary. Clearly, that is not what you want. You want reports to be generated to show you where the encrypted files are so that you can obtain passwords for them and then essentially reprocess them. I say reprocess, and again, that is something that typically you would have had to do. The good news is more recently, the processing tools have evolved and it's now possible to essentially do that in a very easier manner. So it's not necessarily to go through the whole process again. You can essentially add passwords to a password bank and then have any of those documents decrypted on the fly, if you like.
Is there anything else that we should be thinking about when looking at our processing tools, picking a new tool?
Yeah, for sure. So I think you have to consider the whole workflow, right? Whenever you're looking at processing data, it's not just normally pushing a few buttons. There's a lot to that whole workflow. So if a client, for instance, often we get this very frequently near a disclosure deadline, often there's a handful of documents that need to be added at a very, very late stage of the review. And I think if we think about the whole processing workflow, you want it to be an efficient process to be able to process those documents and get them in front of the reviewer as quickly as possible. Clearly, in that kind of situation, you want a processing tool that allows you to essentially have a direct interface between the processing into the review workspace. You don't want to have a separate tool which you then have to export documents from with a load file and then import that documents into the review workspace, because all of that will cause delay. So it's always fun, I would say, when the client gives you a scattering of documents at a very, very late stage. But if you've got the right processing tool, it doesn't have to be that onerous.
Yeah, so we need to look at sort of how that tool integrates with the other software that we're using and how we push the data between them quickly.
That's right. Yeah, I think the interface is very important. You can have a separate processing tool that isn't part of the actual review platform, if you like, but it does cause inefficiencies. So if you do have a direct processing capability, and for instance, Relativity with a Relativity integration point, you can import data very, very quickly when you do get new data at a late stage.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you. That's some really, really helpful advice, which I will be taking to heart. Let's move on a little bit and just touch on how do we talk about processing with our clients or our, I guess, our non-technical stakeholders. I mentioned a bit earlier, sometimes people think processing is a bit of a black box. It's something that data comes in, mysterious things happen, data comes out the other side. And yeah, I have a personal experience of providing a quote for e-discovery services, and you know, this is how much it will cost us to collect, this is how much it will cost us to process, here's our estimate for the review. And our client came back and said, you know what, can we just skip processing? It's too expensive, we don't want to do the processing, we'll just collect it and put it straight into review. And we had to go back and explain that unfortunately, if we can't skip the processing, it's essential. I'm really sorry. How do you sort of describe to your clients or the people who don't know what processing is, what exactly is happening behind the scenes?
It's certainly not as a kind of single process. It's not a one-step process. So there's a lot to it is what I would say, really. And I think you're quite right. People don't really appreciate what is involved in it. And that, again, causes pressures in terms of meeting client expectations, turnaround times and timescales. So I like to kind of break down processing, if you like, into kind of 10 main kind of steps, if you like. So it's definitely not one step. So if we start at the beginning, the first stage of any processing would really be kind of staging the data. We have to get the data into a format that makes it suitable for processing. That might involve essentially just copying data from one location to another, or it might involve essentially extracting specific file types, perhaps from a forensic image, you know, taking out all the office documents, the emails and the user modified files. That copying process and extraction process, it can be very, very time consuming to get the data just in the area in which you can then process it. So that is kind of the first step, if you like, and that has a time element to it. We then could move on, if you like, and talk about the next stage, which would be discovery. And that's really where we're looking at the data and breaking it down into individual documents. That's the stage where all the loose documents are identified and all those email mailbox files and other container files are expanded. During the discovery phase, the metadata of the document is extracted and catalogued. The textual content of those documents is then extracted and a digital fingerprint, if you like, is generated, you know, an MD5 hash for each file that can be used for deduplication. So that, if you like, would be step two, discovering the file, actually breaking it all down into individual documents and individual emails. We then go through that sort of OCR process. Obviously, you've got documents which have textual content, which you can just extract, but you've also got all of those non-searchable documents, which you want to make searchable. That can be very time consuming. Often, images found in the data could have hundreds of pages, thousands of pages, and essentially the tool just has to go through each page looking for specific language content and essentially extracting it so that it can be added to the search index. OCR as well, we're dealing with scanned documents. It can involve pre-processing those files to improve image quality because they're not often presented in the best fashion. So there can be even further pre-processing OCR elements, which might involve rotating pages, for instance, that are in the wrong orientation. All of those processes are adding again to the time involved. So once we've extracted the text from the document through the text extraction and the OCR, we're then finally kind of getting towards the stage of publishing, what we refer to as publishing the data. And it's at this stage really that the documents are deduplicated. So any identical copies of document families on the database essentially are removed. And this is the process where we are essentially assigning unique document references to those documents. So if you like, after published, the documents are there to an extent in the kind of staging area of the workspace. At this stage, then, we have to obviously start QC and processing exceptions. We've already spoken about all the different types of data that we encounter on a system. There's always issues with file types. We have to essentially investigate those and take steps to ensure that we've processed everything as fully as possible. So the QC is very, very important. It's a very manual effort, essentially, which requires looking at any issues that have been flagged and verifying that things have completed successfully. Once we're kind of happy with that kind of initial QC, if you like, we're then going to index the documents. So all of that textual content that we've taken from the documents are added to an index to enable keyword searching. A lot of machine time can go into building the index, and it's very important, obviously, because it's fundamental to the keyword searches that you might want to perform on the data. Junk suppression is something that then would follow. So before the documents are released for review, we'll be performing searches to identify junk and non-reviewable content that potentially we could review. You don't really want everything necessarily going in front of a reviewer. There's lots of things on computers that could be removed essentially, rather than being flagged later by a reviewer. So junk suppression is an important part as well. If we then move on to analytics is very important in today's world, really, with the data volumes that we are all experiencing. You know, email threading is perhaps the most common used on all cases. It's identifying which emails in a set are the most inclusive so that the reviewer essentially doesn't need to review every email in a conversation. They can just essentially see the email that is most inclusive and review the whole conversation in one go. So that analytics process, again, is something that the processing tool has to do before we release the documents for the reviewer. That, if you like, would be kind of the final step, if you like, releasing it to a reviewer, moving the data essentially from the staging area to an accessible area of the review platform. When we actually release it as well, we provide data tracking logs and processing reports and statistics so that all of that information is taken into account with the release as well. I mean, we have to say as well, I've mentioned there are lots of different steps involved in processing, but we have to emphasize that QC as well goes on through all of those different stages. And that is obviously manual task, it's not automated. So you can see really it's a lot more complex than just clicking a button, if you like.
And there's a lot more input from a human. I think you can fall into a trap of thinking processing is you click the button, it processes, it comes out the other side, you release it. There's equal amounts of machine time and human time to make sure that the processing is going, that you're flagging all these exceptions and that you're making sure junk is being suppressed properly. It's not just purely machine.
Yeah, I mean, computers, unfortunately, or fortunately, because we all have jobs, they don't do everything right. There's a lot of experience as well that comes into knowing how to handle processing, how to move forward when you do experience certain issues. Mm-hmm. And it is all human. There's a human element to that, really.
And human expertise is required to understand, I guess, what the problem is and the best way to fix it. Well, Dan, thank you so much for that really comprehensive roundup of processing, all the different steps, what we need to be on the lookout for. If we were to take one thing away from everything you've discussed, what do you think is the most important point for us to remember when we embark on our next processing project?
For an easier life, I would say it probably applies to lots of parts of life as well. Communication is key, right? It's trying to have as much information as you can about what you've actually got. Providing communication is flowing, you're aware of deadlines, you have an appreciation for the data that you're actually collecting, there's a lot less chance for things to go wrong and the subsequent delays and deadlines that can be caused by that.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Dan. And thank you to everyone for listening.
Thanks a lot, Rachel. Thanks, everyone.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.